The opinions expressed in this show are the views of the host and not necessarily that of WTRW, 94.3 The Talker, or the Bold Gold Media Group.
The following presentation is brought to you by the host of the program, who is solely responsible for its content.
All Century 21 real estate offices are independently owned and operated.
Good morning. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundtable with Century 21 Jack Reddy Real Estate on 94.3 FM The Talker. I'm here with my co-host and husband, Pat Devaney.
Good morning, Jackie. How are you today?
Fantastic. How are you?
Very good.
For the third week in a row, we have back with us attorney Richard Finucci. How are you?
Thrilled to be back, Jackie. Thank you so much for having me again.
Thank you for coming back and fitting us in your very busy schedule. We're here every Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 11:30 a.m., where we discuss many real estate topics. We have a full-time real estate office with many experienced realtors. We have been listing, selling, and appraising real estate for over 40 years.
During the week, feel free to email us with any questions, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for the show, send it to questions@jruddy.com. That's questions@jruddy.com, or give us a call at 570-344-6724.
Like us on Facebook at Century 21 Jack Reddy Real Estate. View our listings or search the MLS listings, or listen to an archive radio show by going to jruddy.com, jruddy.com. Okay, Attorney Finucci, tell me a little bit about you, what you do, where you do it from, please.
Well, Jackie, my practice is located currently in Peckville. In just a few short weeks, we'll be moving to Main Street in Blakely, just down the road a little bit. I've been around about 25 years, and we do everything from real estate to estate law, elder law, business setups, business law, and municipal law. My brother and partner, Corey Colcharno, practices primarily in criminal defense of all areas.
Very good. How do we get in touch with you?
My phone number is 570-383-0652. Email lawoffice@attyfinucci.com.
And Finucci is spelled F-A-N-U-C-C-I.
Correct.
This week, I thought we'd mix it up. We're going to just have an anything goes kind of discussion today. We're going to talk about a bunch of different topics. And I thought we'd start off by talking about as is, where is. And when a seller usually wants that inserted into the contract, the agreement of sale, they want a statement saying, as is, where is, what is it that do they want to achieve by inserting that statement, and what does it really mean?
Well, the technical legal meaning behind as is, where is use.
What you see is what you get.
Exactly.
What you see is what you get.
Okay.
Nothing more, nothing less. We are not warranting anything. We are not providing any guarantees.
Okay. Now, isn't the PAR, the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors Agreement of Sale, isn't that an as-is contract?
It is for the most part, Jackie. I don't believe that you'll see those words located in the contract to that extent, but in essence, the language of the contract usually provides that basically the buyer is accepting the property in its current condition after all is said and done, after they've either waived or gone through all the inspection requirements or obligations that they would have, you know, et cetera.
So is it redundant to insert that language as is, where is?
Probably, but often it's what a seller wants. And, you know, quite frankly, I would just put it in. It can't hurt. As is, where is actually a legal term of art. So it doesn't hurt to be in there. I'm actually surprised that language isn't used in the standard realtor contract.
Yeah, it says, just as you mentioned, in its present condition.
Yes.
After inspections.
Which means as is.
Right.
But, you know, for being a legal term, I don't know why they should just put it in there. I know in contracts that attorneys do, when there is no realtor involved, we specifically say as is, where is.
Okay. So it's something that you use, and yes, I wish it was there as well. Now, getting into personal property, sometimes in a sale, there are things that are attached to the real estate that the seller wants to take with them, lighting fixtures or something, a statue, And and I've actually had someone some time ago actually exclude a rose bush. It was her mother's. The mother passed away. There was a sentimental attachment. So as long as it's disclosed, this personal property can be removed, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. Can you define what personal property is, please?
Well, personal property essentially means in the real estate world, Jackie, anything that's not permanently installed or affixed to the building or to the land. Most of the standard real estate realtor contracts itemizes in detail what things are to be included. I mean, most of them exclude personal property, but it goes on to define that most things that go with a house are to stay, such as lighting fixtures, radiator covers, pool equipment, if any, antennas, satellite dishes, screenings for windows and doors, drapery hardware, shades, built-in appliances. Normally those things are spelled out right in the contract that those are considered items of personal property, but for some reason or another, just stay with the house.
Built-in appliances?
Yes.
All right, dishwashers and built-in stoves or ovens?
Yeah, anything built, the general rule of thumb is that anything built in to the property stays. Now, appliances, sometimes that depends on the property. You know, most consider a stove or a range to be a dishwasher, built-in dishwasher. Those things are automatic. Little grayer area with regard to refrigerators and microwaves, and unless they're installed under the cabinet. But it all depends on the property and the deal between the people.
Do you ever see this getting dicey?
Not too often. Where we see it getting dicey with personal property is usually prior to the closing, when a walkthrough is done and the buyer is all ready to go to closing and they go to the property to do their walkthrough, as we call it, or their final inspection, usually an hour before the closing or the night before the closing, and they go in and they find all these things still left there, boxes, garbage, debris, things, paint cans, things that the seller failed to remove. That's where it gets dicey.
Well, that brings me to broom clean. In our contracts, in the PAR, Pennsylvania Association of Realtors Agreement of Sale, talks about that the property must be broom clean at time of settlement. So at time of settlement, meaning the seller has up until the actual time of the closing to remove these items. What happens?
Well, unless it has been specifically agreed to by the parties in the contract, all items of personal property have to be removed from the property. And that brings us to the broom clean part. Broom clean or broom swept is another commonly referred to term, which, by the way, like as is another term of art. What broom clean means is all items of personal property that is not included in the sale, and including any and all debris, garbage, junk, etc., is to be removed and the place basically left empty and not littered. Broom clean does not mean that the seller is required to leave the place spick and span, sparkling clean. They're not required to go in and clean the windows or
wash down walls.
Wash down walls bathroom. Or no, it essentially is a term of art to say basically leave the place empty and free from debris.
But it's very nice when that seller does make it sparkling clean, I have to say.
It certainly is.
It is. It's an act of decency and common courtesy, I think, when someone extends that, because I've seen some places that arguably are broom clean but are still filthy.
Yes.
And it's not so nice. All right. Now, getting back to personal property, I guess what I'm thinking about is fuel oils. You know, I had last contract, the agreement of sale that we use, I had a seller remove all the oil from the oil tank he had delivered the day before closing. And quite a surprise that was to the buyer. This contract now says that the fuel oils do have to remain.
Yes, and that's a part of usually the standard language about personal property, that all fuel and or heating or cooking oils that may be a part of the property that was there as of the time of the contract was signed must remain. I actually had a dispute in my career over such an issue with the removal of oil that the seller went in and drained all of the oil out of the tank, you know, just days prior to the closing. And that doesn't, that's improper, and it just doesn't sit well.
It's expensive,
with the
right? The stuff is a couple of dollars a gallon. You're missing 200 gallons.
It's improper.
Right. So how did that turn out?
I don't recall. I believe we worked something out because it came to my attention at the closing. And, you know, that's another thing. Often these types of issues we don't learn about. We do our best. I try to guide my clients, buyers and sellers, coach them, guide them prior to the sale, try to anticipate. Having been doing this 25 years, we've seen a lot of different situations. And I can sometimes just by get a feel for the deal by talking to one of the parties or talking to the realtors and saying, well, this one, you know, there's been a little tension in this deal, or this has been an issue from the beginning. So you kind of guide our clients. We want to prevent things from happening at the closing table. We want things to go smooth. And of course, ultimately, like everyone, we want to see the deal go through for our respective clients. But, you know, on the walkthrough, we learn often for the first time, which is right before closing, that there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And my client will come to me and they'll say, Rick, we just did our walkthrough and, you know, there's still all kind of paint cans in the basement. There's wood and debris and old magazines and things that they should have gotten out. And, you know, said, okay, well, we're going to address that. And as soon as the parties get in the room, I will, you know, open it up and say to the parties, now we have a problem. And all this stuff was left. It should have been out. The place was supposed to be broom clean. How do we propose to resolve it? And it depends. Sometimes the seller will say, I'm sorry, I'll go back. But always, almost always, Jackie, whenever we have that situation, as faithful performance that they're going to do what they're going to do and they just don't take their check and walk away, we will usually set up an escrow at closing whereby we hold back a sum of money. If we estimate that it may cost $500 to have someone come and remove the items if necessary, we'll escrow $1,000 or $1,500, double or triple the amount, just to ensure that the seller has incentive to do it.
Sellers don't like to remove paint cans because you have to, environmentally, you can't just put them in your trash can. So a lot of sellers feel like they're doing a wonderful service to a buyer to leave that paint can there from 30 years ago. But I can essentially guarantee any seller out there looking to sell their house that the buyers usually, unless it was just recently painted, the buyers do not want those old paint cans. And it is a problem. And it usually does happen because we want to do our walkthroughs as realtors as close to that time of closing because we want to make sure the furnace is operating, the water's getting warm, water's running, toilets are flushing, there's no leaks. If we do it 2 weeks before the closing, there's no guarantee that the house is even standing the day of closing. So we like to get there as close to that closing time as we can. We're headed towards a break. Before we go to break, Pat, would you like to review a listing?
Yes, we have a 3-bedroom, 2-bath located at 2656 Frink Street in Scranton for only $74,000. This home is on a quiet street with a large yard, great views, and a stream just across the street. It has nice room sizes, updated electrical, first floor family room, plenty of off-street parking, and low taxes of only $1,050 a year. So if you're looking for an affordable 3-bedroom, 2-bath on a quiet street, give us a call about 2656 Frink Street in Scranton for only $74,000. And that is listed by Jason Thomas of our office.
Stay with the Real Estate Roundtable with Century 21 Jack Reddy Real Estate on 94.3 FM, The Talker. We will be back after a very brief break. The real estate market is extremely active and you want to make a move, but you don't know where to start, who to call, or how to make it happen. I'm Jackie Ruddy and I know Century 21 Jack Ruddy Real Estate can lead the way. Our quality service award-winning team will help you with buying and selling a home. Century 21 Jack Ruddy Real Estate has a proven track record and experience you can count on. Lean on us to show you the way. Call 570-344-6724. That's 570-344-6724. Or visit jruddy.com. That's J-R-U-D-D-Y.com. Where homes are open every day, all day long. Also, remember to tune in to the Real Estate Roundtable with Century 21 Jack Ready Real Estate, Saturdays at 11 a.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. on 94.3 FM, The Talker. You are rejoining the Real Estate Roundtable with Century 21 Jack Ready Real Estate on 94.3 FM, The Talker. I'm Jackie Ruddy, broker, and with Pat Devaney, my husband and fellow realtor.
Good morning, Jackie. How are you today?
Excellent. How are you?
Very good. Lots of good information from Rick, right?
All the time. This is the third week in a row. Attorney Richard Finucci, who is joining us on the Real Estate Roundtable. What is your contact information?
Jackie, my address is 1418 Main Street, Peckville, soon to be 240 Main Street, Blakely. We're moving just a few blocks down the road near the Anchor. My phone number is 570-383-0652.
We're having a really good discussion with you today. We talked about all different things in the first half of the show. We ended with, right before the break, with my thoughts about the final walkthrough. And I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on the final walkthrough. And that's the time that we take a buyer through a property right before closing.
And you described it perfectly earlier, Jackie, that, you know, the walkthrough is not intended to be a full inspection of the property. And the purpose of a walkthrough is to essentially have a buyer ensure that the property is in essentially the same condition that it was when they agreed to buy the property. And under that means that it is in broom swept condition, as we talked about earlier, that the utilities are in proper working order, the heating system, that the things are, the fixtures are still there, that you know, basically that it's, everything is there, everything is what it should be.
Okay. So, and then there's times when things aren't the way they're supposed to be, which causes last minute problems and situations, and we have to deal with it at the closing table. Did you ever have deal not go through because of the final walkthrough?
Oh, we have, because of a problem with the property that arose that did not appear to be acceptable to the buyer, or because the parties could not come to terms on an appropriate escrow. I actually had a deal that the buyer said, well, I'm walking away. And it's a shame. Those are few and far between.
Yeah, usually we can,
we can
resolve
work things
it.
Out.
Yeah,
usually. Those are very extreme situations. And, you know, Jackie, I want to say that, you know, I mentioned about lawyers. You know, we always try to prepare our clients on both sides and tell them what to expect, the do's and the don'ts. And we do this from the day one, from the day we get the call that they're selling or buying. But also, too, I mean, you know, good realtors like yourself and Pat, you do an outstanding job of properly guiding their clients. You know, realtors are so important in the real estate process and in getting people to understand the do's and the don'ts, what to expect, things like that. And we really appreciate that as attorneys because you make our job easier.
Thank you. And we feel the same about you. But I've been noticing lately, you know, right before closing, we tell the buyers, part of the guidance we provide to our buyers is to tell them that they need to call the utility companies in order to transfer the utilities into their names prior to the seller calling. Because when I notice that the sellers are calling the utility companies because they move out a week or two before, or they're just being thorough or efficient, what's happening are the utility companies, namely the water company, is going out and shutting off the service if they do not hear from the purchaser, the buyers. Have you seen that too?
Not per se, Jackie, although I did see a situation in two separate but close in proximity transactions where the water company had actually gone out and shut the water off. And that actually surprised me in both cases. They were like 2 days apart. And I was wondering if that was a standard practice that they had now, because that wasn't what they usually do. And in fact, it wasn't. I think these were just two isolated situations. But, you know, let me mention to you that it's prudent for not only is it prudent, they need to call the utilities to say, I am no longer going to be the owner as of tomorrow or next Friday or whatever the case may be. Please final bill me as of this date and send the bill to this address. So they give a forwarding address. It's important to advise your sellers that when they do that and they call the utilities, whether it's gas, water, electric, instruct the utilities, do not shut off the utility. Because my understanding is that the utility generally does not do that. They generally will not go out when they know it's simply going to be a transfer or a sale. They're not going to automatically shut the utility off unless there's a miscommunication or a specific direction from the seller. And that's where I think you see what happens, that the seller will call up and say they think they have to shut it off, and they don't. Because then the buyer needs to call. And usually all the utilities will leave a window of time. You know, so if the seller says Friday, the date is going to be the closing, you know, the buyer can call, you know, Monday and say, you know, put it in my name. And, you know, not often do they actually go out and read the meters, or they usually do a proration. They'll final bill the seller as of one date and start billing the buyer as of another date.
Well, if the utilities are turned off, whether it be from a miscommunication from by the seller and the buyer didn't call or what have you, it really screws up that final walkthrough, because we cannot test that the furnace is operational. We cannot test that the water gets hot or that it even turns on. In fact, can't turn the lights on. We can't see anything. So we're in another dilemma at that point if the utilities are turned off. So I do like to instruct buyers to call prior to actually getting to the closing table. And yes, the sellers need to call for final bills. I do agree with that. But it does make for a tricky situation if they're shut off.
I had a situation recently where I was representing a buyer and they were purchasing a foreclosed property. People had not lived in the property for months and months, and the mortgage company had gone in and, you know, secured the home and had shut all the utilities off. They had them fired up when the inspections took place, but then shut them off again. So we had exactly the situation that you just described at the time of closing, unbeknownst to me, until we got to the closing table. What I did there was we held the closing up, and I refused to let my buyer go through and buy the property, because we were dealing with a non-existent seller. We were dealing with a mortgage company. They were very anxious to just get their check and walk away, but I held them to their obligation, and we wanted to make sure that that furnace was going to fire up, you know, the night that they went home after the closing. I wasn't going to take the chance, especially in a foreclosure.
Well, at this time of year, I mean, it could be a little bit more forgiving in the spring and summer months when you don't have to deal with the cold, the ice, and, you know, all this stuff. But this time of year, it, you know, water being shut off or heat being shut off, it could be detrimental to the structure, to the property.
I think it's so important that people get a good attorney when they're buying or selling the house. Some people look to cut corners and not hire an attorney. But just for those little problems that you that are not really little problems that you were just talking about, that some, you know, closing company is really not interested in that. But you take care of all of that stuff.
We do, Patrick, and we seek to, you know, nip some things in the bud. We know what happens, what can happen in a real estate closing. I always, when I first get on the phone with either my buyer or my seller, I always give them a little overview of here's, you know, what to expect, here's what to do and what not to do. And of course, you ever have any questions. I can't recommend enough to people that going through a real estate transaction is probably often the biggest legal matter they're ever going to deal with in their life. And it's just crazy not to have an attorney representing them from either side. And it's a shame that by far too many realtors that I'm aware of, that I've actually heard say, where my clients have come back later and told me, well, they said, well, you don't need a lawyer. All we need is maybe we'll just get somebody to do a deed. That's all you need.
A deed prep, yeah.
That's devastating and bad advice.
I agree. Let me ask you a question. It's like kind of like a monkey wrench here. What happens when you go to the final walkthrough or right before, as you're getting ready to go to closing, something happens with the neighboring property? Let's take a tree, for example. A tree from the neighbor's property comes over in high winds and falls onto the property that the buyer's about to purchase and maybe takes out the fence. Who's responsible? What can happen there?
Well, it's at that point very much still the seller's responsibility. Up to that point, they still own the property.
So they can't say, oh, that's an act of God, I have nothing to do with that, like an insurance company usually does sometimes anymore to deny claims, but they can't say that.
They can try. I could tell you that argument wouldn't fly with me if I were advocating for the buyer, demanding that some remedy be provided. But it's the bottom line is they still own the property. And the, if you go back to the, let's go back to the original contract, because right. I can almost guarantee you.
Everything that, is in the contract.
You know, Jackie, and that's the key of real estate in a transaction, that all the parties' rights, for the most part, flow from that document. It's all about what's in that document, and where it's not, you know, usually Pennsylvania law provides some sort of a remedy. But
let me guess, you're going to go back to the maintenance and risk of loss clause.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's exactly the one that would be applicable in your scenario.
And that says that the seller must maintain the property in its condition, present condition, until the time of settlement.
Right on.
Okay.
Right on. Now, you know, we've had situations where things like that do happen right prior to the closing. That is no fault of the seller, but bottom line is it's still their property. Cutting grass, high weeds, shoveling snow. I mean, it's the seller's obligation to shovel the paths right up to the time of closing, arguably.
And sometimes personalities get in the way, their relations sour, and there's really just sometimes, you know, as realtors and as attorneys, there are situations and you try to control them the best that you can. Human nature, though, if there's bad feelings happening in this transaction, it's harder to get those things done.
Yeah, so much harder. Most of the time, I'm happy to say that things can be worked out. Like the example of a tree falling. Well, let's hope that the seller still has insurance coverage, depending on how extensive the damage was. Hopefully, it's something that'd be covered by insurance. If not, if you don't want to go through that, I mean, the seller can always, you know, get somebody to come and take care of the problem, and or the buyer says, well, I'll take care of it in exchange for something else. And usually there's a remedy.
Okay, that's good news. Now, I want to talk about something that's been happening out there and alert the listeners. There's, if they've closed on a house they've recently purchased, this is mainly affecting people that have bought property. There's a little notice that they get in the mail. Have you heard about this?
I have, Jackie, yes.
And the little letter says that they can, for a very small flat fee of $80, $85, something less than $100, that they can, if they send their money in, they can, this company, this person will send them a deed.
Yeah, send them a certified copy of their deed.
Is there a certified copy? What's a certified copy?
Yes, there is, but it's certified is nothing more than what the client themselves can go and get from the courthouse for free, by the way.
Or online.
That's right, in Lackawanna online. County.
You know, yes, what you're referring to, Jackie, is I'm aware that there's companies out there. There's people that have actually are in business of going to the courthouse or looking online at the daily transactions, and sometimes we could just read them in the paper. They will go look to see who bought a property, and then they will shoot a letter out about a week after the closing to the address of the property saying, we will obtain for $85 or $100, we will get a certified copy of your deed for you. You know, don't be caught without your deed. When in reality, you know, the day that that deed is recorded, the person, anybody, can go online and access that and get a copy of that deed for free. There's your certified copy. Or they could walk to the recorder of deeds office of any county and they can ask for a copy at any time. You know, it's a minor fee, you know, maybe a dollar.
For the copy.
For the copy.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So there really is never a need for anybody to pay somebody, especially $85 or $100, to go get a copy of what they can get for nothing. And one more thing, any of my clients, I routinely represent buyers, and as part of my service and my fee, we tell them right at closing, I am providing you with a copy of your deed today. I am going to record this deed at the courthouse for you. It'll be returned to me within a week or two. When I get it, I promise you, I will mail it to you. So they get it right from me anyway.
I know that. Yeah, I know.
But sometimes these companies will send them the letter before they get it back from me.
Right. And sometimes if they didn't hear that from you or someone else, they wouldn't know any better and they think it's a good deal.
I make it a point at closing. So anybody out there listening, you get these letters, don't do it.
Excellent advice. Thank you for 3 weeks of fabulous discussion, Attorney Richard Fannucci, who can be reached at 570-383-0652. Remember to tune in next Saturday at 11 or Sunday at 11:30 a.m. to listen to more of the Real Estate Roundtable with Century 21 Jack Ready Real Estate on 94.3 FM, The Talker.
All Century 21 real estate offices are independently owned and operated.